said. Don't want it to take a sudden swim. Young miss, my father said, this is your new queen. The man stared at him. I apologize, he said. The words were almost a question. Let us cross, then, quickly. I perched on the bench, and two guards climbed in the boat behind me, taking up all the remaining space. Wait, I said, as the boatman pushed off. I looked to Naomi and my father, still waiting on the shore.
The boat will come back for us, Freya, my father said. You must go ahead.
They couldn't make me go ahead alone.
The guards can wait, I said. We can cross together.
The guards cannot wait, Freya. Did you forget what has happened tonight? Of course I hadn't forgotten, but the guards were as likely as anyone to hurt me now. We had no idea who had attacked the king. I'd be safer with people I knew. And as useless as I was, I didn't want to leave Naomi alone. But the boatman had already rowed several lengths away, and I knew he wouldn't turn back. I pressed my chin against Dagny's fur. The fort loomed ahead, a dark shadow against the sky. The boatman deposited me on the bank on the other side, and my remaining guards hurried me up the steep, pathless hill. My shoes slipped on the mud. I glanced back at the opposite shore. I should wait for my father and Naomi, but my guards were relentless. Finally, we reached the fort's official road and climbed it to the entrance of the castle itself. Its large iron doors stood open, but the portcullis blocked the way. My guards shouted for it to be raised, and someone inside must have heard, because it shuddered up, the chains shrieking. I looked down at the city, the winding streets, the jagged roofs, the old minister tower reaching past them all. The palace was a sea of green in the chaos. I could still see the lantern lights in the garden, shining with determination even in the dawn. The palace itself was all tall windows and stone columns, unchanged by the horrors it had seen. "Come, Your Majesty," one of the guards said. He had a gentler face than the others, with a tightly cropped gray beard and concerned black eyes. "We should not linger here." I glanced again at my father and Naomi. Their boat was already halfway across the river. They were as safe as they could be. I would see them again inside. I'd never been inside the fort before, and from the smell of it, no one else alive had either. It stank of must and neglect, a chill hanging in the air. The walls pressed in on either side, free of adornment, supporting the ceiling 15 feet up. My guards led me down the corridor. We passed almost nobody. Some maids were hurrying from room to room, but few even glanced at us. None of them paused to bow or curtsy. They led me to a tightly spiraling staircase in the far corner of the fort. There were no lamps and no windows, so one of the guards seized a lantern to light the way. We climbed to the second floor and the third. A door opened on the fourth floor, and someone barreled out, slamming into me. They were tall, even taller than me, well built. My nose slammed against their collarbone, and they flinched back, feet stumbling on the steps they had just descended. I yelped, more in surprise than pain, and Dagny leaped out of my arms. It was William Fitzroy. I swayed from the impact, staring at his face. His blue eyes were bloodshot, and his golden blonde hair was spattered with a dark substance that might have been blood. But he was alive. Another survivor. I hadn't even thought of Fitzroy since I left the palace, hadn't even considered the possibility of his death. But relief rushed through me when I looked at him now. He was kind of an idiot, but he didn't deserve to die. He, at least, was here. Solid and breathing and blinking at me in confusion. "I'm sorry," he said, with a distracted shake of his head. His grief was like a physical presence in the air, painful to breathe in. "Excuse me." He stepped around us and hurried on. I stared after him,
unwilling to look away until he was out of sight. He had survived. Someone, at least, was left. I scooped Dagny up again and nodded for my escort to continue. The guards led me to the top floor of the fort, where the royal apartments were kept ready for times of crisis. No one was watching the entrance when we arrived, but one of the guards peeled off to stand there, while the other led me inside and through to a large room clearly intended for the queen's use. Embroidered red cushions had been piled on the four-poster bed, and a thick rug covered the otherwise bare floor. A harp stood against one wall. The queen had loved music. And I could see many unworn dresses through the open door of the wardrobe, each worth more than a year's income to most people in the kingdom. Pots of color had been lined up on her dresser, along with a brush and jewels. Even in an emergency, the queen would look her best. "Do you have everything you need, Your Majesty?" The guard hovered by the door. He looked rather eager to leave. Of course, he couldn't leave my presence without permission. "Naomi," I said quickly. "Will she be coming here too?" He opened his mouth, then closed it again. He looked nervous. "These are the royal apartments, Your Majesty. Everyone who comes to the fort will be given accommodation, but only you can stay here. For your own safety." "Is there anything else you need?"
"No."
My voice cracked on the word. "No, thank you." "Then I will leave you to rest if that pleases Your Majesty. It has been a long night." I nodded, and with a bow, he stepped out of the room and closed the door. But I was in the wrong place, I realized, as the lock clicked. The monarch should have been in the king's room, not the queen's. So much for asserting my place. I was as out of the way here as I would have been in my lab, but perhaps that was the point. It suggested respect, without putting me in the most obvious place for another attack. I dropped Dagny onto the bed. She kneaded the sheets, her claws snagging on the silk. A diadem rested on the dresser. Diamonds glinted in the dim light. I picked it up, careful to avoid touching the jewels, and slid it onto my head. It perched there, looking gaudy in the reflection against my black hair. Queen. I was queen. My reflection didn't seem to believe me. Who would? I didn't look like a queen. Ruling in Epria meant being as glamorous and luxurious and beautiful as possible. If you dripped with gold, if you were spoiled and selfish, if you looked like a fitting idol at the center of the court's intricate dances, then you could be queen. I just looked like a gangly child, dressed up in my mother's jewels. I looked ridiculous. And not the good kind of ridiculous, the one that everyone in court adored. Weak, laughable. But what did it matter? I thought, as I tossed the diadem back on the dresser. Everyone was dead, weren't they? What court did I have left to lead? I hoped Naomi was all right. Queens probably had servants to help them undress, but no one would be coming now. I stretched my arms around my back, reaching for the laces, but I couldn't grasp them, so I kicked off my shoes, washed my face in the basin by the window, and sank onto the sheets. My arms fell around Dagny, and she snuggled close. I buried my face in her fur and let her rhythmic purring soothe me to sleep. 4. I awoke to sharp knocking on my door. I sat up, shoving my tangled hair away from my face. My eyes felt sticky, and a dull ache pounded at the back of my head. I hadn't slept nearly enough. "Freya?" It was my father. "Are you all right?" I tried to step out of bed and stumbled. I was still wearing that ridiculous dress from the banquet, with its 36 layers of skirt and sleeves up to my ears. It had become twisted while I slept, and I fell as I tried to right it, my elbows slamming against the floor. I bit back a cry, tears stinging my eyes. "Freya?"
"Yes,"
I gasped. "I'm all right. What's happened?" The lock clicked, and my father stepped inside. "Did you sleep well?" He could not honestly be asking me that. I had slept, but it had been a strange sort of half-sleep, always on the verge of waking. "What's happened?" I said again instead, standing up as my father closed the door with the guards on either side. "Have you found who is responsible?"
"Not yet, but we will."
"Do you know how many?" I couldn't finish the question. It was too awful, and it wasn't even what I really wanted to ask. I wanted to know if another heir had been found, someone to rule before me.
"We don't have a count. Over 400 at least. It will take days before we know for certain. But that can't be our priority now. We must act quickly.
To catch the killers?
To have you crowned. We cannot allow the kingdom to remain without a monarch any longer than absolutely necessary. It makes it too easy for someone to challenge you."
"But what about the funerals? There would need to be so many."
"And the investigation? Not as pressing as your coronation. The dead will remain dead, no matter if we delay. We cannot say the same for your throne. If you take some of the old queen's things, we can have you crowned tomorrow, but..."
It would be an insult to dress up in finery now, while everyone else was dead.
"It's too soon."
"It isn't soon enough. You are vulnerable, Freya, as long as you are not the anointed queen. Once we have you crowned, in front of everybody, people will hesitate before they hurt you. Until then, we cannot risk it, Freya." I raked my hands through my tangled hair.
"What happened last night? What did you see?"
"It was very sudden." He looked away, eyes focused on the embroidery of my bed hangings, as though they might provide the answer.
"After the last course of the feast, people..."
"Some people began to complain of stomach pains, then..." He swallowed and dragged his gaze back to me.
"I will spare you the details of what proceeded."
"Don't spare me the details. I want to know."
"I needed to know, needed to understand. People were dead. And if I could understand that, if I could really know..."
"You do not want to know.
They will remain dead either way. You have one concern now, Freya. Be queen. You will have a whole council of people to investigate these murders. You need to focus on your own safety now."
"But a council of people weren't me. Someone had killed many of the most influential and well-protected people in the kingdom. They'd succeeded, even though simply mentioning the idea would have led to their arrest. They were dangerous people, dangerous and clever. I needed to know who they were. I needed to know how they had done it, why they had done it, and I couldn't trust anyone else to find out the truth on my behalf."
"What about Naomi's brother?" I said.
"Did you find him?"
He sighed. "I don't know what happened to him. If he was at the banquet, then it is unlikely he survived. But it's possible."
"Yes, Freya, it is possible.
For now, Naomi has been given accommodation in the fort and our protection as well. But I have been working all day to take care of the details for you. Other people's brothers, right now, they cannot be my concern."
"But it's my concern. Naomi is my best friend. I know you want it to be," he said sadly.
"But you can only deal with so many things, Freya. You have to focus on staying alive and holding on to the throne. Her brother is either dead or alive. We can't change that."
He shook his head and then straightened, as though shedding his grief.
"We need to get started. We'll have to fit you for a coronation gown, and I will go over the protocol with you."
The rest of the evening passed in a blur. My father returned with four seamstresses in tow. They carried Queen Martha's coronation dress between them, but one glance told me that it would never, never fit. It took longer to convince them. They squeezed me into it, urging me to breathe in more, as though that might make my shoulders less broad. When they'd finally forced the dress into place, unfastened but on, they fussed with the buttons and the hem, politely avoiding saying what was obvious to everyone. The dress was several inches too short. It strained around the waist and across the shoulders, while the chest gaped. Short of adding a patchwork of new cloth, even the Forgotten themselves wouldn't be able to make it fit. "The problem," one of the seamstresses said, as she stepped back to survey the damage, "is that the dress is rather old-fashioned. It is 20 years old, after all, and it was never intended to crown a monarch. It might be best if we salvage from Queen Martha's dresses and make something new for our new queen." My father frowned, but his impatience couldn't change the fact that the dress wasn't going to fit. "Could you have it complete by tomorrow?" "We must, mustn't we?" the seamstress said. "We will work through the night."
"Then see it is done."
They freed me from the dress, and then they measured me, talking a mile a minute as they went, about regal colors that would suit me, about how many jewels were suitable for such a somber yet important coronation. When their talk lulled, my father threw etiquette at me. As an unwelcome newcomer in court, he had made sure to learn every rule for every situation, and it was coming in handy now. I repeated the instructions in my head, but they jumbled together, nothing quite making sense. Tomorrow, I would be on display for all the grieving kingdom to see. The seamstresses left to begin their work, but my father remained, running over the coronation rules again and again, making me walk around the room with a regal air, correcting my posture, correcting my gaze, correcting everything about me. Was he remembering, as I was, all the times I'd skipped my etiquette lessons, how I'd sulked and shouted and fought until he gave up on courtly elocution and dancing classes? Maybe if I'd gone to those lessons, actually tried, instead of assuming it was all useless to me, when I planned to go as far away from this court as I could, maybe then this would have been different. The seamstresses returned in the middle of the night for a fitting. The new dress didn't exactly calm my nerves. Jewels weighed it down, although only half of them had been added, and the mass of them made it even harder to breathe. By the time morning came, I was dizzy with tiredness and fear. But the preparations weren't over. It took 2 hours for the 4 seamstresses to dress me, even helped by an apparent army of maids. They sewed me into the dress as they went. Jewels were stitched into the cloth, hung around my neck, studded on my shoes, and draped around my waist. And still, my father reminded me of all the things I must not do. The most important one, the one he repeated over and over, was that I must not speak. Not one single word beyond the ritual itself. I had to wonder, was that tradition, or was that rule only for me? The minister reached taller than a castle, its bell tower hidden by the clouds. Every inch of its stone exterior was covered by intricate carvings and gargoyles, and when its bell rang, the sound echoed through the entire city like singing. It was a building crafted by the divine Forgotten, before they left this kingdom behind. Rickben, the peacemaker, Elandra, the fierce, Garrett, the trickster, Valenthe, the just. They had ruled Epria when it used to be better, but abandoned it in disgust at the kingdom's growing corruption. Now only a few relics remained, miracles of architecture and engineering, a reminder of how great the kingdom had once been and could be again. It always sounded like nonsense to me. We had no records, no real proof of their existence, just a bunch of old buildings and a collection of legends. Everyone knew the names of at least 20 of the Forgotten, but even these were just tradition. As far as I was concerned, the Forgotten were just an excuse. People saw things they couldn't even dream of creating, and decided that they must be divine. I kept my eyes on the minster now, staring at one of the grimacing male faces above the doorway. Crowds had gathered on either side of the path, but I couldn't let myself look at them, couldn't let the fear take hold. All I had to do was walk. My legs shook underneath my skirts, but I did not fall. The inside of the minster had always amazed me. We were rarely allowed inside. Once a year for the midwinter celebration, once a generation for a coronation. And every time we were, I spent more time staring at the ceiling than I did listening to the words of the priest. I glanced up again now, taking in the carvings and paintings 60 feet above me. How? I wondered, every time I saw them. How had anyone climbed so high to paint? The people inside rose. I fixed my eyes on the altar at the far end of the minster, miles away, surely, from where I now stood. The rear pews were crammed with the commoners invited to see my coronation. The merchants, the bankers, the lawyers, the doctors, all here for a glimpse of this unknown queen. They had already judged me, I was sure. The moment I stepped through the door, they had decided what sort of queen I would be. The front half of the minster was almost empty. I should have expected it, should have known. But my stomach still dropped when I saw empty pew after empty pew. These boxes were designed to fit at least 500 nobles. Less than 20 stood there now. The remnants of the court, or at least those willing to see me crowned. It was possible, that some of them had decided not to attend. Possible, but unlikely. None of them would want to miss this. I glanced at the back of their heads. Who were they? I didn't know most of them well enough to tell from a quick look at their hair, but I recognized Naomi. Her black hair was in a simple bun at the back of her head, strands falling loose. Her brother was not beside her. My stomach dropped, and I dragged my gaze away. I had to concentrate. I couldn't get distracted. I focused on the steps ahead of me, the platform, the gold throne, and the chanting priest. Somehow, I reached the dais, and the hours of practice clicked. My knees hit stone as I knelt for the priest's blessing. I bowed my head as he dabbed oil on my forehead. I sat on the throne as someone handed me the ceremonial scepter and orb, as a red sable cloak was placed over my shoulders, as the priest stepped behind me and balanced a crown on my head. The ritual flowed past, like someone else was moving my body, and I was just watching, too.
All kneel before Queen Freya, first of her name, ruler of Epria. Long may she reign.
The priest stepped back, and the crowd fell to their knees.
Long may she reign.
I let myself glance at the nobles before me. My eyes went straight to Naomi, and she gave me a gentle smile. But she was alone. Maybe Jacob was ill. Maybe he was shunning me. Something. It didn't mean he was... Her brother wasn't dead. My father knelt with a group of men and women I vaguely recognized. Some of the king's old advisers, I thought. Torsten Wolf knelt by another pew, and Fitzroy, a smattering of people. This couldn't be everyone who had survived. It couldn't be. The others must have simply stayed away, unwilling to see me crowned queen. That was all. Don't lie to yourself, I thought, anger rising out of nowhere. No one else was left. The priest quietly cleared his throat. It was nearly over. All I had to do was leave and lead the court out of the minster. Just one more thing. I stood, and the priest lifted my cloak so it did not snag on the throne before spreading it out behind me. I wasn't allowed to touch the cloak, my father had told me over and over last night, and this morning as well. I couldn't touch the cloak, I couldn't lift the cloak, but I definitely should not stand on the cloak. But I had no idea how I was actually supposed to do that. Even at 5'10", I was too small for this thing. It must have weighed more than I did, and the train that spread out in all directions. I took a small step forward and teetered on my jeweled heels. Another step, and another, and I had reached the edge of the dais. 5 stairs between me and the courtiers, and then a straight walk to the door. Easy. I stretched my right foot out, feeling for the steady reassurance of the step below. Once I found it, I shifted my weight and brought my left foot to meet it. 4 steps to go. 3 steps. My heel caught on the hem. The cloak yanked down, jerking me backward. I wobbled, fighting for balance, but the crown was too heavy, throwing me off, and I stumbled, falling to the left. I spiraled my arms, fighting to stay upright. My knees slammed onto the step. The crown tumbled. It landed on the step with a clang that shook my teeth. Priceless jewels scraped against the floor. I couldn't react. I watched as it rolled, bouncing down 1 step, then the next, each time landing with a sound like a gong. Nobody spoke. Nobody moved. The entire room stared at the crown. It stopped just below the bottom stair. Undamaged, I thought, but still on the floor, not on my head, and I didn't know what to do. My face felt like it was on fire, and my cloak was still tangled around my shoe. Should I retrieve the crown myself? It might be bad luck for me to touch it, like it was bad luck for me to touch the cloak. Would it be unqueenly to hurry after my own jewels? Even more unqueenly than falling and tossing them to the floor to begin with? I closed my eyes and took a deep breath. I was a queen, officially now. I could deal with this. It was the first test, and I would handle it. I had to handle it. I reached down and untucked the cloak from the jeweled heel of my shoe. I spread it carefully out behind me, away from anywhere I might step, and then I stood. At least nobody was laughing. Everyone was staring, but no one made a sound. The priest hurried forward and picked up the crown. "Rulership does not sit comfortably on any worthy head," he said, in the same ringing, serious voice he had spoken in before, as though this were all part of the ceremony.
"Our sovereigns may be guided by the forgotten, may they one day return, but their power should be a weight, a burden, and not something they grasp with both hands. But, Queen Freya, we beg of you to take on this duty."
And he placed the crown on my head again. I could have hugged him. This time, I made it out of the minster without mishap. An open carriage waited by the steps, ready for the procession through the city, and I climbed inside in silence. The journey back to the fort was a somber affair. My father had tried to make it grand. He really had, with fanfare ahead of me, and guards pounding drums, and me perched in an open-topped carriage that seemed to overflow with gold. But people did not want to celebrate. Everyone in the city seemed to have come out to watch, but they did not cheer as the carriage passed. Most just stared at me, or murmured to their neighbors, wondering why this plain teenager girl was dripping with jewels in the royal carriage, instead of the gregarious king they all knew, asking why I, of all people, could claim to rule them. My father had forbidden me to smile or to wave. I needed a show of power now, he said, and openness was weakness. It wasn't hard to look serious, with so many people glaring at me, but I knew they weren't impressed. The queen was supposed to be more somehow, more than a person, more than a human, demanding the attention of everyone around her. I just looked like I'd stumbled into the carriage by accident, which I guess was true. I looked forward, focusing on the horses pulling my carriage along. The music drowned out any sound from the crowd. If I wanted to survive, I needed to think small, focus on my council and the nobles at court. They would deal with the wider world. That was how it had always been, the responsibility cascading down, the ruler only ever needing to look at the next tier. So I would have to impress the court, and everything else would fall into place from there. Because if I thought not just about the surviving nobles, but about everyone in the kingdom, the hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people, each with their own wants, their own opinions, each ready to be disappointed by me, each wishing their ruler was anyone other than me. Stars flared in my vision, and I shoved the thought away. Even the famously irreverent court couldn't possibly stomach festivities when hundreds of people lay dead, but a half-hearted feast had been laid out in the old throne room at the fort. There were no pies filled with doves, no elaborate desserts, no decorations on the walls. Someone had set out long tables, as though they needed seats for hundreds of courtiers. The spaces seemed to mock us all. There were more empty chairs than there were living guests, and the survivors were scattered in small groups around the hall. I sat at the high table, positioned above them all. Normally, the monarch's family and favored guests would join the table, but so few people remained that my father insisted I sit alone. 20 people could have been seated here, but instead, the space stretched out on either side of me. A queen with no allies at all. Naomi was seated halfway down another table, similarly alone. Her black hair was piled into another elaborate style, but it was drooping to one side. She didn't seem to have noticed. I needed to talk to her. I needed to find out how she was, what had happened to her. But I didn't dare move. I had a few more hours to endure. There was food, at least. Pheasant and raspberries and wild boar, but how could anyone eat it with the memory of the last feast so fresh? Servants brought out dish after dish for my approval, but I selected them at random and barely ate a bite. The room was almost silent. I could hear every groan of a chair, every splash of wine in a cup, every brave scrape of a knife against a plate. Everyone was trapped here until the end of this charade. Nothing was going to happen, I told myself, as I forced myself to chew a piece of boar. But beneath my stage fright, beneath the awareness of everyone's eyes on me, genuine fear lingered. I was a target. We had no idea what had happened at the last banquet, so it could easily happen again. Someone could try and complete the job, catch the heir they had missed. And I was making it easy for them. Sitting here, eating this food, acting like I thought I was invincible, which I knew I wasn't. They could hurt me as easily as they'd hurt everyone else, and I was just sitting here, making it easy for them. I stood. My chair scraped against the floor. Everyone stared at me. But I couldn't bear it, not for another moment. I had forgotten how to breathe. This wasn't a real coronation. King Jorgen would never have been isolated like this. He would have had music, dancing, wine, a table so crammed with people that everyone's elbows bashed together. But I couldn't be like that. Everyone had died, and I was supposed to rule, but I didn't know how, and no one would be convinced by this. No one. The room blurred at the edges. I needed to breathe. I swept out of the room, forcing myself not to run. My guards marched behind me. I needed air. I needed some air. The corridor beyond was quieter, at least. The cold air refreshing. I fell back against the wall. I closed my eyes, shutting everything out, and focused on my breath. Breathe in, breathe out. I could do this. I could.
What do you want?
I opened my eyes. William Fitzroy stood farther down the corridor. His eyes were slightly red.
I didn't know you were here.
What else could I say? My voice was too breathy, but at least I managed to speak.
Quitting already.
He laughed, and the sound rattled through me. Fitzroy usually sounded so light, mocking at his worst. Now he sounded cruel.
They never should have had you crowned. You don't belong here.
I looked at him, his messy hair, his bloodshot eyes. I couldn't deny it. I didn't have the strength to build any lies.
You're right. I don't.
Any fool could see that. But I'm here anyway.
He blinked, and his eyes widened. Had he just realized what he'd said? He opened his mouth to speak again and then stopped.
What? I wanted to say.
Tell me.
All the silence, all the pretense of the day had eaten into me. Everything was fake. Grief and weakness buried deep. But not him. Not then. I wanted his words, his honesty, whatever cruelty ripped out of him. But he just shook his head and stepped back.
Excuse me.
He walked away. My hands shook.
Your Majesty?
My guard stepped closer.
Are you all right?
No. No, I wasn't all right. I wanted to scream at them to go away, that I needed to be alone, to breathe, to think. But that wasn't fair. This wasn't the guard's fault. Fitzroy was right. I didn't belong here. But if I showed weakness, if I ran and hid, my head would be on the chopping block before I could blink. If someone took the throne from me, even if I stepped aside, I was queen now, for as long as I breathed, and I did not want to die.
Yes, I said to the guards. My voice shook, but I said it, at least.
I should go back inside.
I stumbled back into the hall.
5. A couple of hours later, I stood outside Naomi's door, trying to work up the courage to knock. One of the guards had shown me the way to this fourth-floor corridor that housed some of the surviving nobility. It looked like it hadn't been touched in the hundreds of years since the court had lived here. It stank of mildew, and the few lamps were sparse, making it feel more like a dungeon than a home. I needed to see Naomi, to speak to her, but now that I was here, I had no idea what I could possibly say. Her potential grief terrified me. I hated myself for the thought, but the fear screamed inside me that I did not know what to say, that I would say the wrong thing, that I'd make things worse somehow. I wanted to be able to stride in there and see her and make all of her sadness vanish. I wanted to give her a plan, at least, a way things could be improved. But if her brother was dead, if he was dead, I couldn't change that. And that helplessness froze me in place. What good was a friend who couldn't help? But I couldn't let myself avoid her. What sort of friend would I be if I abandoned her because I didn't know what to say? I wouldn't let her think she was alone. I rapped 3 times on the door. A long minute passed before it opened, and Naomi peeked through the gap. She looked like a fraction of herself. She'd released the complicated hairstyle from the coronation banquet, leaving half-braided ropes hanging over her shoulders. Dark circles like bruises ringed her eyes. She stared at me for a moment, and then threw herself forward, her arms flying around me.
Freya!
We collided, and she burrowed into me, her head pressing into the space under my chin. She murmured something into my shoulder, and I couldn't understand the words, so I squeezed back, pulling her closer still. She was crying, I realized.
I'm sorry, I said, the words rushing out of me. I'm sorry I abandoned you outside the fort. I'm sorry I haven't seen you before this. I wanted to. I kept asking, but everything was so chaotic. And my father...
She shook her head. I know you couldn't see me.
I missed you. I missed you.
She squeezed me again, and then shifted back.
Do you want to come in?
Yes, I said. I mean, if that's all right. I wanted to... We should talk. I glanced over my shoulder at my guard, who hovered a few feet away. Do you mind waiting out here?
If that's what Your Majesty wishes.
I nodded, and Naomi pulled the door closed behind us. Her room was barely salvaged from decay. Storage crates were still piled against the right wall, and Naomi's clothes hung over the boxes. Her bed was hidden under a pile of blankets, and the few lamps were still dusty, the light distorted by grime.
Naomi, this is awful. Why did they put you here?
They haven't had a chance to clean all the rooms yet. And I didn't ask anyone. At least I have somewhere to stay. You can't stay here. Move up to the top floor with me.
Naomi shook her head.
I can't. Those rooms are for you.
And I can do whatever I like with them, can't I?
I want you to stay.
Please.
I should have come sooner. Why had I left it so long? I should have fought harder.
Jacob, I said, my voice raspy.
Did he?
I already knew the answer, even if I couldn't admit it. But when Naomi shook her head, I still felt like someone had punched me in the chest, knocking all the air from my lungs.
He didn't make it.
I hadn't known Naomi's brother well, but I had known him. He'd always winked at me, every time he saw me, and from him, it always felt like affection, never a joke at my expense. He called me Frey, too.
Hey, little Frey.
With that wink, whenever I went to find Naomi and he was nearby. For him to be gone. I'm sorry. Such useless, meaningless words. I wanted to wash her grief out of her, to swallow it up so she wouldn't have to feel it. I wanted to drag her brother back from death, so she'd feel whole again. I wanted to do something.
Thank you.
Naomi glanced over at the arrow-slit window.
I still can't believe it. How can they all be gone? It feels like this is just... I don't know.
Her voice shook, and she swallowed, squeezing her eyes closed.
I'm just glad to see you.
She opened her eyes again, her voice turning determined.
How are you? How are you coping?
With what? Being queen? She nodded. It doesn't matter.
Yes, she said fiercely. It does. Sit down and tell me.
I perched on the edge of the bed, and Naomi sank down beside me. I'm all right. I mean, I'm not all right, not really. I have no idea what I'm doing. But I'll learn.
You'll do it. I know you will.
Naomi pulled her bare feet onto the bed and rested her chin on her knees.
And you don't have to be all right, you know, if you're not.
The familiar words made me smile, just slightly. I'm still alive. I still have you. That's more than most people can say now. Naomi wrapped an arm around me again, pulling me closer. A knot in my chest loosened as her head fell onto my shoulder, honesty swelling inside me.
I'm scared, I said quietly.
Because you have to be queen?
No. Well, yes, but I only survived by accident, Naomi. I wasn't meant to be here.
The words felt too dangerous to speak aloud, as though speaking them made them true.
What if the murderer decides to finish the job?
Then I'll kill them first, Naomi said fiercely.
Nobody hurts my Freya.
You are terrifying when you're angry.
Naomi nodded decisively.
I can't trust anybody, I said. Not until I know. I'm supposed to have a council meeting tomorrow, and I just keep thinking, what if one of them was responsible? How can I possibly protect myself from that? But I don't know how to be queen, and if I don't trust them, you have me, Naomi said. I'll help you.
I nodded. I knew that. Just her presence gave me strength, reminded me of all the things I could be. I sat up straighter.
I have to find out who the murderer was, I said. I have to solve this myself. It's the only way I can keep myself safe.
Do you think you can?
I have to.
I'd figure out who was threatening me. I'd learn how to be queen. It was a vague, almost laughable plan, but it was a plan nonetheless. And that was what I needed. A goal to frame things with. A way to approach all of this confusion.
I'm sorry, Naomi said quietly. I know you wanted to leave.
I'd never do my research on the continent now, I realized.
I'd be tied to this court for as long as I remained alive. The knowledge was a crushing weight, lurking in the back of my mind, demanding to be mourned. But I couldn't admit it. Not when Naomi had actually lost a brother. Not when everyone had lost so much. "I'll figure things out here," I said. "I could never have left you anyway." Naomi's shoulders shook. I turned to look at her to see tears rolling down her cheeks, her lips pressed tightly together. "I'm sorry," I said quickly. "Why did I always say the wrong thing?" "No, no," she said, through her tears. "It's just... it's stupid, Freya."
"It's not stupid."
I thought we wouldn't be friends anymore, now that you're queen. And I thought, well, I've lost my brother and my best friend all at once. I'm just so glad you're here, Freya."
I hugged her again. She pressed her face into my shoulder. "I'm not going anywhere. Come on, Naomi. Come and stay with me in my rooms. I don't want to leave you here. I don't know if it's allowed. I make the rules now, don't I? And that'll be my first decree."
"It's not much of a decree." "Well, everyone has to start somewhere." She laughed softly, and I smiled.
"Please, Naomi. I can't do this without you."
"I guess that's good then," she said, "because I can't do this without you."
6. "Perhaps we should begin, if it please your majesty."
Rasmus Holt was a rather stern-looking man in his 60s, with a white beard that grew into a point and a sharp nose to match. He had been in King Jorgen's council for the past 20 years, or so my father told me, and was now the leader of my own council. I'd hoped to arrive early to the meeting, to settle in and greet my counselors one by one, but when I entered the new council room, everyone had been waiting inside. Holt and my father were there, along with a narrow-faced woman called Sophia Thorne, the Master of Intelligence, I was informed, and a woman with a severe braid down her neck, called Joanna Norling, who was the Master of Justice. Torsten Wolf completed the group. He was so tense that the muscles in his neck looked close to snapping. He sat at the other end of the table from me, the perfect place to glower at me without turning his head. He, Holt had told me, would be responsible for issues of security.
"Security?" I said. "As in the army?"
Epria was a peaceful island kingdom. Guards protected the cities, of course, and the countryside had peacekeepers who answered to local nobles, but we hadn't had anything resembling an army for over 100 years.
"No, no," Holt said. "Nothing as dire as that. But Sten is an expert in military history, and he served on the last king's council as a general advisor. He's the best mind we have in case of any disturbance."
Disturbance. The word made me shiver. Was he really expecting something that dramatic? Not just poison at dinner, but soldiers? Military strategy?
"Not that we need to worry about such things," Holt said, as though he had read my thoughts. "But the past few days have shown us it is prudent to be prepared."
I was pretty sure that the old council had included more than 5 people, but I supposed this small group was all that was left now. All survivors of the banquet, all suspects, all people I needed to rely on. Now we were seated around the lone table in the room, trying to ignore the many empty chairs. The entire remaining court could have fit around it easily. Someone must have cleaned the room overnight, but the memory of dust lingered in the air, scratching my throat. The stone walls were bare, with arrow-slit windows protecting us from sunlight as well as invasion. Oil lamps hung around the room, but they only seemed to emphasize the darkness. Holt watched me, waiting for my permission to continue. I nodded.
"Very good, very good," he said. "Well then, I know that tragedy has brought us here today, but we must look forward.
This is the first council meeting of Queen Freya the First. Long may she reign.
Long may she reign. My counselors murmured. I stayed quiet. It seemed too strange to say that about myself.
Thorn, Holt said, what do you have to report about the attack?
Not enough,
Thorn said. She had a rasping voice, like the words were passing over sandpaper.
It seems the poison was hidden in the cake served as the final course. None of those who survived seemed to have eaten any. One girl had a few bites and was unwell, but she recovered. Everyone else? Well, we cannot interview the dead, but it seems likely that they all had a piece.
And the poison, Holt said. The symptoms suggest arsenic. Nausea, stomach pains, racing heart, and enough of a delay that the tasters did not fall ill until after it was served. We have no way to prove that, of course, unless someone confesses, but the evidence is fairly clear.
That made sense to me as well. I wasn't an expert on poisons, but the description matched what I knew. A little more research would be necessary to ensure the symptoms didn't fit a rarer, stranger poison, but the explanation worked for now. But the important question wasn't what, but why. But who would want to poison so many people? I said. My voice sounded a little too loud, and I swallowed, fighting the urge to soften it with rambling.
We do not know, Thorn said. We have yet to find any clues in the cake.
The king ordered it himself. We will track down the ingredients and see who might have had contact with it, of course, but it is all just speculation as of yet.
One possibility, Norling said, is that the Gustavites were involved. Are you familiar with them, Your Majesty?
I've heard of them. I'd heard of the book anyway, Gustav's treatise. He'd been something of a radical 100 years ago, claiming the nobility were corrupt, that we were all a gold-devouring plague on the land. The corruption part was definitely true. He'd wanted all the crown's wealth to be spread equally across the kingdom, and he wasn't quiet about his views. He'd been exiled, along with his words, but he'd never stopped talking, and people had been far more interested in his book once it was forbidden.
A small group of them had been meeting in the capital, and they'd have the motivation. They are dangerous people.
But it felt a little too convenient. They'd never acted against the court before. I hadn't heard a single rumor about them. Wouldn't something have happened before they resorted to mass murder?
Do you have any proof?
It is only a theory as yet, Thorn said, but if they were responsible, we will prove it.
How many of them are there? Do we know who's involved in them?
They are being very secretive, Your Majesty. Another reason to suspect them, but we will learn all we can.
It made sense that a group like that would be secretive, whether they were planning murders or just meeting for weekly book discussions. My counselors had no evidence that they had any connection to the poisoning.
Regardless, we must be wary of them, Holt said. They may use this as an opportunity to increase their influence.
Of course. I was so far down the list of inheritance that calling me queen was almost laughable. All order had already vanished. They'd only have to push slightly for me to fall as well.
So what should we do?
I said.
Show your strength, my father said. Continue as before, unfazed by any of this. If you are convincing as queen, it will be much harder for them to fight against you.
All I had to do was be convincing. That was all. I tried to fight back a laugh, but it escaped anyway, ringing off the walls. Everyone stared at me and my face burned.
Yes, I said. I just have to be convincing.
We will guide you, Your Majesty, Holt said. You are new to this, we know. But we can help you. You can trust us here.
But I couldn't trust them. I couldn't trust anyone except my father and Naomi. Everyone here had survived the banquet. any of them could have been involved in the murder, and none of them had any reason to be loyal to me. There was nothing to stop them from finding a better candidate to rule. I looked at the table, gathering my courage again. "Were you all at the banquet?" I asked. When it happened? Thorne shook her head. "My husband was taken ill, so I could not attend." "Is he all right?" I asked. "He is well now, Your Majesty, if weak. He may not appear in court for some time." That was convenient, but I nodded at her. "The rest of us were all there, I believe," Norling said. "I remember speaking to Rasmus, at least, and your father. I was lucky that I was no longer hungry and didn't eat any cake." And Sten had been sitting at the high table. I'd seen him clearly. I looked at him now, and he frowned. "The cake did not appeal to me," he said. "I am not the sort to eat gold." "Torsten, your cousin," Holt said, cutting the tension left by Sten's last words. "Have you heard from her since this happened?"
"She sent a letter ahead," he said. "I told her to stay at home, but she's returning to the capital as quickly as she can."
"Madeline is your heir now," Holt added to me. "Perhaps you are friends already. Such a delightful girl."
No, Madeline Wolfe and I were not friends. I'd seen her many times. Every time I came to court, she was at the center of it, smiling at everyone, twittering with her bell-like laugh, flirting with Fitzroy when he was in favor, ignoring him when not. Everyone adored her, but she had always seemed rather empty-headed to me, too beautiful for her own good. Not that I'd ever actually spoken to her, beyond the odd "excuse me." She was too refined to ever stoop low enough to talk to me. If I hadn't left the banquet, she would have become queen. Everyone would have been far happier with that, including, perhaps, Madeline, judging from her flirtations in the court.
"I told her she wasn't well enough to travel," Sten said. "The doctor told her to stay away until the new year, but when has she ever listened to what the doctor says?"
"She isn't well?" I asked.
"She hasn't been for some time, Your Majesty," Holt said. "It is always such a loss to the court when she retires to her estate. She is most dedicated to her charity work, and a lovely girl besides. But the country air is said to do her good."
"How long was she gone this time?"
"A couple of months, I believe. Is that correct, Torsten?"
"Yes," Sten said. "That's right."
He was watching me carefully.
"Did Her Majesty not realize my cousin was away?"
"I've never spoken to her," I said. "I didn't know she was gone."
"Do not worry, Your Majesty," Holt said. "I am certain you will like her. She is a kind girl."
A kind girl who just happened to be away from the capital during a mass murder. A kind girl now one step away from the throne.
"Speaking of journeys, I know this is a delicate subject," Holt continued, "but we must discuss the funeral arrangements for King Jorgen. He must have a fitting ceremony. The funeral will, of course, involve the traditional rites, and the queen will travel alongside him. But it has been suggested that the other victims should be included in the service, too, in one show of respect for them all."
"It has been suggested by you, Holt," Norling said. She had a sharp, decisive voice.
"And it is completely unsuitable to let people share the funeral arrangements of a king. It would make the queen seem gentle-hearted," Holt said firmly. "And it would be fitting, considering how they all died together. It creates a sense of unity in mourning. It creates the sense everyone is equal," Norling said, "which is not what a new queen wants."
I picked at the loose splinters underneath the table as they continued to argue. It wasn't what was usually done, but that didn't mean we shouldn't do it. Everyone had died with the king. They'd probably died because of the king. And people like Naomi's brother deserved just as much respect as he did, in the end. "I think it's a good idea."
"Then we shall proceed." "Your Majesty,"
Norling said. It is a good idea in theory, but you cannot understand Holt's true meaning.